Blog Talk Radio.
Glasses, I couldn't see. Good evening, folks. Leo's signing, he's got something that he wanted to read from the AFL-CIO. Hopefully he can find it. But in the meantime... Did it come today?
Yeah.
Okay, why don't I look for
it? Well, it's right here somewhere.
I can't believe the problem they're having with that. Was it a congressman, Aiken?
Yeah, Aiken?
Just unbelievable that somebody could say anything, something so ignorant, and believe it. That's why nobody really wants him, his pathetic apology.
Okay, this is from the AFL-CIO, and it's called Romney Ryan Gets a Message Out. And I thought it was kind of interesting. Not very long, just a directive from the AFL-CIO. It says, you might have heard Mitt Romney announced the vice presidential pick, Paul Ryan from Wisconsin. The Romney-Ryan pick is just a double down by the GOP on its plan to destroy the middle class. While a member of Congress, Ryan crafted a budget plan that would end Medicare as we know it, slash funding for education, and to fix our crumbling infrastructure, like bridges and roads. Oh, he has supported destructive free trade agreements like CAFTA, C-A-F-T-A, that ship goods U.S. jobs overseas. Ryan wants to gamble with our retirement by privatizing Social Security. And like Romney, he has supported attacks on collective bargaining rights for public workers and defended tax breaks for the rich. We need to get the message out. The Romney-Ryan plan to transform America from the land of opportunity to all into a land of entitlement for the rich. Excuse me, I'm sorry. They're going to spend millions of dollars on TV ads, but we are something better than our pot of money from the Cayman Islands. Even each of you has the power to influence the people who matter most. Your friends and family, the folks you talk to all the time. We don't need media pundits to share our message. We are at the power of the real people. Share our Facebook image now with your friends and family so that you, not Romney and Ryan's rich donors, can be the ones who get the message out. And you can go to that. You can go to check out their Facebook and their photos. And the Facebook photo is them sitting on the Ryan and Romney sitting on tons of money.
They're on boogie boards or surfboards, and it says the Ryan plan would transform America from a land of opportunity for all into a land of entitlement for the rich.
For the rich. And it's true, you know, and it's really bizarre. And what their intentions are, it's kind of frightening, actually. They're very frightening.
I think so.
There's nothing about the Romney Ryan plan. If it could actually help this country, that I can see.
That president presidency and that campaign is about campaigning for the presidency would be just reflect the interests of the corporations and the 1%. That's all.
Oh, yeah. And
and I hope people can see that. And certainly our listeners can, I'm sure. But, I mean, you really have to get out there and vote.
Area
where we and Republican vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan agree, but there is at least one. Ryan says he is a big fan of the band Rage Against the Machine. Who knew Ryan, the Ayn Rand discipline and worshiper of unfettered corporate power, could find common group with Rage, which has made a career out of singing and fighting for progressive causes against corporate greed. Maybe as the band's frontman and union member Tom Morello writes on RollingStone.com, it's because Ryan simply doesn't understand the music. Paul Ryan's love of Rage Against the Machine is amusing because he is the embodiment of the machine that our music has been raging against for two decades. Charles Manson loved the Beatles but didn't understand them. Governor Chris Christie loves Bruce Springsteen but doesn't understand him. And Paul Ryland is clueless about his favorite band, Rage Against the Machine. That's interesting. Click here to read Mel's full column and to read our interview. Oh, you can read the full interview that they had last year with Morello on music, politics, and activism. Morello is a member, and he's the head guy on band's frontman on Rage Against the Machine. Is a member of the American Federation of Musicians of the United States and Canada, Local 47 in Los Angeles, California.
Right.
So he's a union member.
And they put out a cease and desist order for him to stop using that his music, their music, for the Romney campaign, which I thought was a good thing. There's another couple of things here that... percent of America's workers live paycheck to paycheck. America's workers are existing on the edge of financial disaster. 40% say they live paycheck to paycheck, according to a recent Reuters survey. Worse, 37% say they sometimes need to rely on the next paycheck payday to make ends meet. Although the percentage of those literally living from payday or payday has decreased from 42% in 2011 and from 46% in 2008, the height of the recession, this is not good news. In addition, the survey found women, 44%, are more likely than men, 36%, to live paycheck to paycheck. One quarter, 25%, of female workers missed a monthly payment at least once in the past year, compared to 17% of men.
That's because women make less than men.
That's true. And more than a quarter of workers, 27%, do not save anything each month. And 30% save more than $250, and 1 in 10% save more than $1,000. Career Builder, the nation's largest online job site, also found that those most likely to live paycheck to paycheck are between 45 and 54, 43%. Huffington Post looked at the reasons why this age group would have the toughest time making ends meet.
Kids in college?
Well, because there's the squeeze of supporting children and family. One survey found that 90% of boomers shoulder this load, and the fact that a quarter of Americans age 50 and up used up all of their savings during the recession years of 2007 through 2009. Health also affects one's ability to make ends meet. Injury and illness are the biggest cause of personal debt for 40 to 59 year olds, according to AOL Jobs article. Still, whether 40% or 43% of working Americans live from paycheck to paycheck, either percentage is far too high for a nation this rich. There's something more going on. The declining standard of living for middle and working class Americans is no accident. U.S. trade policies depleted our nation's manufacturing base. Federal tax policies promoted inequality and rewarded wealth over work, leaving us without enough money to fund our public infrastructure or the education and training we need in a global economy. And some employers and lawmakers have made conscious and coordinated efforts to delegitimize government and destroy unions to take away working people's ability to stand up to corporate excess. The Romney-Ryan ticket, with its support of offshoring jobs, massive tax cuts to the massively wealthy, and calls to defund core public programs like bridge and street maintenance, education, Social Security, and Medicare, would further financially sink America's middle and working class. The thought of how many U.S. workers will be living paycheck to paycheck at the end of a Romney administration is chilling.
It's very frightening. Very, very frightening.
I mean, it's bad enough, but this guy could send us right into freaking oblivion.
The problem that he has is which of his 12 houses he's going to live in. Should I spend time in this one or that one?
Yeah.
And how about the interview with his children where they think it's okay for the poor to go and fight as long as they don't have to go. They're rich. They don't have to go.
Yeah.
But give the poor a job. Give them something to do. What workers really fear on the job by Tula Connell. What's your biggest worry about your job? Some 40% of America's workers say they fear their benefits will be reduced in the near future, according to Gallup's annual work and education poll released today. That compares with 28% who are afraid that wages will be cut back, and 28% who fear they will be laid off, a percentage that's still high compared with pre-recession levels. In addition, 26% fear their hours will be cut back. The polls found U.S. workers with less formal education are more likely than those with greater educational attainment to worry about losing their job or having their pay or benefits reduced. Some 34% of college non-graduates say they are worried about being laid off, compared with 18% of college graduates. So what do these new data mean? American workers feel secure about their employment situation, even during one of the slower economic times in U.S. history. Perhaps helping to maintain consumer spending enough to prevent a second recession. U.S. workers feel their benefits are most at risk, which may be the first place employers seek to cut back during difficult economic times. And workers may be willing to accept such cuts over more severe measures like pay cuts or layoffs. When you depend upon your employer to provide essentials like health care, losing a job means a lot more than lost wages. Unions are the best defense against the billionaire-backed Romney-Ryan politicos who seek to do what America's workers fear most, cut benefits, slash jobs, and squeeze wages. It's kind of scary.
Yes, it is.
And I recommend this website, folks. Go to the AFL-CIO.
Yeah. And check that out.
And see what you think. Taking their pleas straight to Romney at the Republican National Convention in Tampa. As Romney tries to sell himself as a man who can put Americans back to work, we'll see if the campaign continues to dodge the 170 American workers who are being put out of work by the private equity firm he created. Well, that's what they did. They bought companies and just laid off people and sucked the energy out of the company or whatever it was, and that's how they made money.
Yeah.
And folded the company. That was his idea of creating jobs.
Here's something else. Can the GOP preview, can Romney win as the man of convene? When Bill Clinton appeared, accepted the 1992 Democratic presidential nomination in New York, he was portrayed in a video as the man from hope. A governor from a small Arkansas town promised better economic times and more jobs. Then Texas Governor George W. Bush claimed the 2000 Republican presidential nomination in Philadelphia as the man who would beef up national security, restore dignity and respect to the presidency. Well, next week, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney will be presented to the Republican National Committee in Florida as the man from Bain Capital, or so it would seem from recent media reports. And, right, what's he got going for?
Representation for the 1% is what he has to offer.
Romney's advisors are orchestrating a 4-day convention that is not so much designed to make Americans like him any more than they do, which is not very much, according to polls, but to enthusiastically embrace the idea of him as the nation's leader, a uniquely qualified businessman who can fix the economy, according to the Washington Post. Instead of glossing over Romney's career as a private equity executive who made his fortune by buying, overhauling, and selling companies, the New York Times say that the Broadway-style convention production will highlight the experience that prepared him to become the country's next economic steward. Russ Schuker, a senior Romney advisor, told the Post that while it is important to convey a sympathetic portrait of Romney, we're going to talk about what the American people really care about, which is how Governor Romney can make their lives better. From
good luck.
Now, from reticent to risky, from a political team notoriously cautious, Romney and his advisors have seemed more than willing to roll the dice recently to try to shake up the campaign, move ahead of President Obama in an extremely tight race. The choice of House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan as the vice presidential nominee immediately shifted the ideological contours of the campaign and put Medicare reform and fiscal constraint back on the front burner. So does a convention weak strategy of directly embracing the Bain mantle. An overhauling the Medicare program for future seniors has never been a political winner for the Republicans, even with the caveats being offered by Ryan and Romney. And the controversy over Bain has haunted Romney politically for nearly 2 decades, dating back to his unsuccessful challenge of the late Senator Edward M. Kennedy in Massachusetts in 1994. We got to see a riskier side of Romney that challenged his image, veteran Republican pollster John Zodkey told the Fiscal Times. He changed the focus of the debate away from jobs toward fiscal sustainability. There is now a stark choice, 2 completely different governing models. Ron Bongean, a Republican Washington political consultant, said the Ryan choice is like a strong 3-month energy drink until election day. He brought renewed enthusiasm to a race that is bogged down by gotcha attacks. This energetic new partnership will be on full display next week when the 2 leaders and their large telegenic families come together in Florida for 4 days of orchestrated speeches and festivities. The $2.5 million stage and the high resolution screens is the backup. Want to read that thing about the convention preview?
Convention preview. Many of the speeches at the convention, including the keynote address by New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and Florida Senator Marco Rubio's introduction of Romney, are being drafted to describe how Romney intends to create jobs, slash taxes, eliminate government red tape, boost energy production, and sharply reduce the debt. Some of the speeches are almost certain to say that Romney and others at Bain Capital pioneered modern-day business practices. a sort of Darwinian survival of the fittest strategy that eliminated weak performers while promoting cutting-edge and highly successful companies, including AMC Entertainment, Staples, and Domino's Pizza. Obama and the Democrats have accused Romney of engaging in a form of vulture capitalism at Bain Capital during the late 1980s and 1990s, which made millions for him and his investors while driving many businesses into the ground. A TV ad aired recently by a group of supporting Obama suggested there was a link between the death of laid-off steelworker's wife and Romney's former company. Obama tried to distance himself from the ad last week, but he said he intends to keep raising sharp contrasts between himself and the GOP challenger. Even so, the July 19th to the 22nd polling by Gallup suggests that Republicans may be wise to highlight Romney's business experience, including his years at Bain. That poll found that 63% of Americans believe that Romney's business background would help him to make good decisions as president in dealing with economic problems. How stupid can they be? While only 29% viewed his business experience as negative. Ross Baker, a political scientist at Rutgers University, said that rather than worrying about putting a good face on his business background, Romney should realize more that the 2 years of income tax returns he has pledged to make available to defuse Democratic charges that he has something to hide. Romney said last Thursday that he paid at least 13% of his income in taxes each year during the past decade. However, he has steadfastly refused to release more than his 2010 return and his 2011 return, while the campaign plans, which the campaign plans to release before October 15th. He needs to take the income tax issue head on, which he hasn't done, and I think that's more important, Baker told the Fiscal Times. All the boasting about job creation he's going to be given a script for is not going to shut down that issue, and it raises the question, what does he have to hide? That is a real weak spot in that campaign. If the GOP does its job at the convention and for the balance of the campaign, it will place the economy and jobs, not Romney's taxes, at the top of the voters' agenda. But that's a tall order for Romney, who has a long way to go to close the gap in key battleground states. Will the man from Bain change the game? And this report was by Josh Folk of the Fiscal Times, and he contributed to this. Interesting.
That's a good article.
Yeah. By Eric Flannan and Josh, whoever his name is there.
Fiscal Times.
Yeah.
And what I would like to do is we're going to go for a quick music break, and we'll be back with some, excuse me, some environmental news and a little other stuff. Okay?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Thank you.
Cray? I thought it was great. I loved that.
Yeah. Oh, and this one I want to read is from RT, Russian TV. But it says, no rights, no charge. U.S. extends ex-Marines Facebook psych war term. Okay? Now, it's amazing what they did to this poor guy. Brandon J. Robb has been ordered to stay in a mental health institution for a month without charge. And contrary to American Constitution, his defense says, his supporters are concerned any American could end up in Robb's shoes. U.S. Police detained Robb, who's 26, a Marine Corps veteran, on Thursday, without presenting any charges and even without reading to Robb his Miranda rights, and took him to John Randolph Medical Center, where he is currently being held involuntarily, his defense said in a press release. A video of his detention emerged online, triggering outrage online, including among American citizens and human rights activists. The quote stated that for government officials to not only arrest Brandon Robb for doing nothing more than exercising his First Amendment rights to free speech, but to actually force him to undergo psychological evaluations and detain him against his will goes against every constitutional principle his country is founded on, said John Whitehead, executive director of the Rutherford Institute, a civil liberties group that has come to Robb's defense. His statement on the veterans' situation, posted on the Rutherford Institute website, points out that Brandon Robb is no different from the majority of Americans who use their private Facebook pages to post a variety of content ranging from song lyrics and political hyperbole to trash-talking their neighbors, friends, and government leaders. Robb's mother, Kathleen Thomas, told in an interview with CBS 6, a local news network, that the evaluation, as she is told by her son, is 15 minutes long, and basically the evaluator said that he was not ready to go back into society and he needed additional psychiatric treatment. At a recent hearing on Monday held in the mental institution, government officials confirmed Robb's Facebook post as the only reason for his detention, paying no attention to his comments that those online messages were wrongly interpreted. And security forces are said to be using a piece of legislation called the Virginia State Code, emergency custody, under which it is permitted to detain a person in a mental institution without presenting any charges against them, only upon a medic's recommendation. A Facebook group comment supporting Robb has been created and has over 4,500 members as of now. And they show some of the comments.
Well, it's just exactly what to be post.
Well,
it doesn't really tell you.
Yeah, well, it doesn't really show the post. It says, but somebody who was one of the people on the site said, this whole idea that Brandon Robb should be arrested for what he stated over Facebook is simply insane. I mean, the man is a hero. So that means that if any American citizen posts any opposing viewpoints about development, then he or she will go to jail? I mean, this is not the America my parents raised me to pledge my allegiance to. I think America needs to change, and more people need to wake up to the realization that our government is taking away our rights. This is a guy on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Its participants call the situation simply insane and say that what has been happening with Robb indicates that everyone disagreeing with the government in a war is leading. Will have to keep their mouth shut. In his Facebook post, Robb suggests the U.S. government is involved in 9/11 attacks and called for the arrest of some government officials. The ex-Marine said, I've been very open with the things I have said, have had to say on my wall on Facebook. It's interesting to me that the government is watching Facebook in the first place. That ought to raise some eyebrows and cause some good American citizens some concern, he added. Coming to the Daily Mail from the hospital. FBI spokeswoman Richmond D. Wodinski, though denied any monitoring of Robb's account. We received quite a few complaints about what were perceived as threatening posts, she said. Given the circumstances that the things that have gone on in the country, some of these mass shootings, it would be horrible for law enforcement not to pay attention to complaints. Ralph, however, said he does not even own a gun. Veteran served in the U.S. Marine Corps from 2005 to 2011 and participated in Iraq and Afghanistan wars. They're not showing, probably because it's evidence, they're not showing what he posted, right? But the fact that, you know, maybe the fact that
well,
he's a Marine, I don't know. It must be.
Almost 90% of them, or all of them, who come back suffer from PTS.
Yeah.
So they probably get scared every time they see a posting by one of these guys. I bet 90% of them, maybe even more, suffer from PTS.
Well, 25% kill themselves, so yeah.
So they're not in a strong mental health state when they come out. What does that tell you? Number one, they're not receiving what they need from the Veterans Department. Those issues aren't being addressed. Their mental health status is not being addressed. Instead, it's being treated in a reactionary way. Holding somebody against their will instead of treating someone for their problem, you know? They should be evaluated and treated before they come back.
I agree.
And be given the proper help.
Speaking of Facebook, this might be really interesting to read. The beginning of the end of Facebook.
Boy, that's a real plunge, isn't it, in value.
PayPal billionaire, who was its first investor, sells most of his shares worth $1 billion.
Wow.
This is from Mail Online.
He must have bought them very cheaply.
Yeah, he was the first investor. Peter Thiel invested $500,000 in Facebook in 2004. He made about $1 billion from cashing in his Facebook stock since the firm went public. Also recently invested in a firm aiming to grow stakes in the lab. Oh, my God.
Huh?
Growing stakes in the laboratory.
We did read about that.
Well, one of Facebook's first investors has bailed out of the firm and sold 20 million shares. PayPal billionaire Peter Thiel, one of Facebook's earliest investors and member of its board, was among the insiders selling stock in the social network after a lockup expired last week. It has emerged. As one of Facebook's initial investors, he invested $500,000 in the company in 2004. A regulatory filing said that Thiel, a former CEO at PayPal, sold about 20 million shares of Facebook to affiliates, such as his founder's fund. last week. Thiel invested in dozens of startups through Founders Fund and also recently backed a firm planning to grow stakes in a lab. The shares were sold on Thursday and Friday for between $19.27 and $20.69 for a total of $396 million. He also sold 16.8 million shares in the company made initial public offering, making $640 million. So this bastard made $1 billion.
On a
$500,000 investment.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Thiel is expected to use the cash to fund a new investment firm set up earlier this year. The partner, Asian Royan, his latest firm called Mithril, will invest in new firms that have already received some venture capital but need more to expand. The firm will have an office in San Francisco. Thiel also has his own foundation and awards cash to promising youngsters who decide not to attend university. Another $1.66 billion locked up in Facebook shares will be freed up for sale over the next 9 months, likely to place more pressure on the stock. One of the biggest tests will come in November when the next batch of 1.2 billion shares will be eligible for sale. As Facebook's share price continues to plummet, critics have accused Mark Zuckerberg of being in over his liquidity. Called for him to step down as CEO. Corporate experts have suggested that a 28-year-old founder should stick to what he does best and be technological and an innovator and hand the CEO reins over to more experienced executives. And any doubt about Zuckerberg's further compounded on Thursday as the company's stock price plunged to an all-time low of $19.87, almost half its IPO price.
Mm.
There is growing sense that Mark Zuckerberg's talent, though he may be, isn't over the city as CEO of a multi-billion dollar company.
Well, he maybe doesn't have the skills for that, but he had more of an innovator.
Yeah, you know.
Very talented person, but, you know.
I don't know.
I think there's too many things left in there. Encouraging active transportation, non-motorized transportation such as bicycling and walking, and more importantly, to encourage land use and growth patterns that facilitate transit and non-motorized transportation. Here the reader can see once again another trend of encouraging non-motorized transportation that coincidentally tends to be taking place all over the rest of the country as well, particularly in major cities. To be clear, however, this writer is not suggesting that creating systems of transit that facilitate walking, cycling, or public transportation is inherently evil. This is not the case. Without a doubt, such travel systems should be made available. However, we must understand that whatever small and largely temporary benefits that may result from the COG system is only part of a larger agenda, and these benefits are indeed only of a transitory nature. Thus, the second point regarding the statement, encourage land use and growth patterns that facilitate transit and non-motorized transportation, is very important because it is here that we see the hallmark of Agenda 21. The creation of a transportation system that discourages the use of motor vehicles and private transportation. Indeed, such a transportation system places a heavy burden upon rural communities and is only one step in choking off the life sign that allows them to exist in a functional manner. The CalCOG also appears to be involved in California's cap-and-trade system, implemented under the 2006 California legislation AB 32, the Global Warming Solutions Act. Such a scheme designed to reduce industry and increase the cost of energy for businesses and individuals alike is taking shape all across the world, and the reasons for supporting it from a globalist and/or eugenicist perspective are legion. At the very least, CalCOG seems to have recognized the cap-and-trade scheme as the great source of revenue for future pet projects funneled down to them from the shadowy forces that form international policy. In this instance, however, it is easy enough to deduce that revenue generation was a secondary concern at best. First and foremost are the UN-based mandates that will inevitably chase billions of people out of rural areas and into cities, even as industry disappears and the energy costs, which are a necessary component to any urban society, skyrocket out of the reach for all but the super rich. For years, much of this type of public-private UN-based activism has been openly conducted by organizations like the International Council on Local Environment Initiative, also known as Local Governments for Sustainability, ICLEI. The ICLEI is an organization that is made up of over 1,000 local governments, the majority being from the United States, who have bypassed federal and state law as well as the Constitution in order to implement Agenda 21 policies. Indeed, most major cities inside the U.S. are now signed on to ICLEI. As Cassandra Anderson of MorphCity.com writes in her article, ICLEI invasive in 600 American cities. ICLEI institutes the U.N. Convention on Biological Diversity Treaty that was withdrawn from a vote on the Senate floor in 1994, and so the treaty designed for U.N. control is being implemented in the cities. The ICLEI's own website is quite open about their goals, and this is what it states. International goals. Our programs and projects promote participatory, long-term strategic planning process that addresses local sustainability while protecting global common goods. This approach links local action to internationally agreed-upon goals and targets, such as Agenda 21, which means reducing the population, the Rio Conventions, the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UN Convention on Biological Diversity. Anderson has also conducted an interview with Richard Rothschild, the first county commissioner to officially oppose the United Nations International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives. Rothschild recounted some of the provisions that promoted him to oppose ICLEI early on, one of which being the proposal having to do with city centers, stacked urban dwellings, and pedestrian and bicycle accessible city centers. Of course, this plan is virtually identical to the plan being implemented by the CalCOG in California and other COGs all over the country. I myself wrote an article entitled South Carolina Moves to Implement Agenda 21 Guidelines, where I addressed the same plan which was being presented to South Carolinians at the state level by the South Carolina State Legislature in conjunction with South Carolina Quag. Well, this article goes on. It's quite long, but it really reveals how insidious their plan is. And so they're just insinuating themselves
into
the local government, bypassing the Congress.
Well, that's what their plan was. And the other thing to remember is, please go to activistpost.com, and you'll get the whole article.
Come down to the end here. This is what he says. However, the main point that needs to be understood is that the relationship need not be official to be effective. As I mentioned earlier, COGS have been implementing and introducing the very same legislation and policy as ICLEI since inception, which was defeated in the Congress. Clearly, the COGS are just one more undercover arm of the international elite that wish to cage human society with smart grid technologies, stacked city dwellings, and a significantly reduced population. If anti-Agenda 21 activists have been at odds for a target in their local community, they now need look no further than their local council of government. That's what he said.
That's where we're at, folks. So, that's, thank you, Lila, for getting that. And,
So, despite the fact that this bill was turned down by Congress, I just decided to go to the local governments and do it that way. On the face of it, it seems like such a good thing, you know, like encourage people to ride bicycles and walk. I think those are all good things. But when you really delve into it, you realize that the ultimate goal is not good at all.
Well, the ultimate goal is to, you know, take away your cars, take away your transportation, make you more and more dependent on government services, which is the, and, of course, that forced people from the rural areas to move into the cities because it cuts them right off.
And they can't afford the gas.
And they can't afford the gas.
Which only the super rich will be able to afford, and they'll buy and they'll own all the land outside the city.
This I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know. unprecedented concentration of the
That didn't go to the page that we wanted, I'm sorry.
Great night, folks.